98% pure potato.
98%
pure potato.
Hello, this is the latest podcast from 98% Pure Potato, and this is John Griffiths introducing the next episode. Now, last week I had focused the topic very much on the big themes from the last chapter in the book, which is therefore looking quite far forward. Where is planning going? This week and potentially next week, I want to go right back to look at beginnings. And you might be yawning and thinking, why would I want to hear about beginnings? Well, this is pre-beginnings, a bit more controversial. We did a postscript in the book, which was about the rivals, the what I would argue are pretenders, who claimed to have started planning before they started in Boaz Massemi Pollitt and J. Walter Thompson. Why is that of any interest to anyone apart from obscure historical interest? Well, because it actually tells you quite a lot about what made the brand of planning, which came out of Boaz Massemi Pollitt and J. Walter Thompson, enduring, which is why we still have planning with us today. So let me talk you through who these pretenders were. The first one was somebody with the interesting name of David Brent, and he's an Australian. Now, David Brent, who I believe is still making claims that he is the originator of account planning, he just got to it ahead of Stephen King. He was an Australian who started his brand of planning, as he claimed it, from 1965 in Australian advertising agencies. David Brent's background was in counterintelligence. He was involved in Malaya, in the action that was taken by the British and Australian armies against communist insurgents in the jungle. So what David Brent does is to bring his counterintelligence, counterinsurgency experience and apply it to the business of advertising and communications, which is interesting because of all the military metaphors which still litter marketing terminology today. But what makes David Brent interesting is that he claims that he identified customer response ahead of Stephen King. I don't think that was true, because we know that the targeting plan, called the T-Plan for short, was launched by Stephen King in 1964. So he and Jeremy Bulmore were already working on the idea that customer response was much more important than sorting out your messaging. And that's something I've referred to several times, and you can go back to older podcasts as ways of getting to that. But that is what makes David Brent potentially most interesting, because he says, actually, planning is about customer response. And I agree. The reason why I have concerns about David Brent's claim to the crown is really what happens next. He gets a job in an Australian ad agency, and after 10 months, has to leave it. There's no department, he's not recruited anybody, and he then joins another agency where pretty much the same thing happens. Now, I think this is quite important, because however good the idea that he has about customer response, if you don't turn it into a department, if there's nothing there once you've left the agency, then I would argue that account planning as such does not exist. In other words, it's not just a job that somebody does, it is a function which the agency has, which persists. Because with or without people in place, those questions continue, and it seems to me that he's not made a case that those questions were indeed asked after he'd left the agency and he was in that sense a one-man planning department. I think that's an important thing, because I myself have worked as the only planner in an agency, might have been called a planning director or whatever, and I'm not saying that if you're the only planner in an agency that planning does not exist. What I am saying, though, is that you are there to preside over a function, and what's important is that the function persists whether you are there or not. In other words, when you leave, they hire another planner. And this doesn't seem to have happened in David Brent's case. I think what makes Stanley Pollitt and Stephen King so important is that it's evident that although they were very bright, they were very passionate about advertising, and both made immense contributions to advertising thinking, what we remember them for is less their thinking than the group of people that they put together who were able to take that thinking forward. And that, to me, is the real contribution of those two, which is why I still regard them and not David Brent as a founding father. So that's David Brent. We then move on to another character whose name is John Wood. He claims to have started planning even earlier because he worked as a research director at Collett, Dickinson and Pierce. Now, we spent some time following up and interviewing people who'd worked at CDP, because CDP is arguably the most creative UK agency ever. And if you don't know their work, well, go and look it up, because it's astounding. A very interesting agency. And John Wood was hired as a research director, and he claims that everyone in CDP did planning, so they didn't need to be a department. Well, not strictly true, because actually in the early 1970s, David Clifford, who we did interview, was brought in to start up a planning department. And there was a bit of an overlap, but John Wood left soon after that. But this claim that John Wood made, that CDP was in effect using planning thinking throughout the 1960s, deserves some investigation, because if that is true, then it would have taken place around the same time as Stephen King was getting going, or possibly a bit earlier. And because of the significance of Collett, Dickinson and Pierce, it needs a look. I was quite tempted to posit that CDP was a lost planning school because of their work and because of some of the brilliance of the thinking which took place. Let me give you an example. John Siddall, one of our interviewees, talks about how much he learned from John Wood about communication strategy. One of the main things that was mentioned was this idea of the preemptive generic, and I'll just explain it to you. This is the way in which CDP identified what the role of the advertising was. They would do product research to establish what the primary benefit was in a category. Normally the market leader would be doing that, and normally CDP, because it was kind of out there, was not working with the market leader. It was working with someone that would be four or five places down in market share, and the clients would be so desperate to stand out that they would be willing to go to an agency like CDP and say, do your creative best, because we need to overcome lack of budget, lack of whatever, and please take us to the top. So what CDP would be doing is to identify the main driver in the category. And the rule was this: if the market leader was not using the most important benefit, then you chose that. The chances were that they were using the most important benefit, and if they weren't doing it very well, then you might try to do it better so that your advertising became more famous than theirs. And the argument was that whoever took the most important generic benefit in the category and made that the most important, the most famous in the advertising, would by definition have the highest share of voice, and everyone would follow them. So that was the thinking that CDP was following. Now, what was interesting about this approach was that it allowed them to be very snooty about advertising development, because once they'd identified the most important benefit, and once they got a piece of advertising which dramatized that benefit, they really didn't see why they should have to show that advertising to anyone in research to get them to validate it. Because frequently the advertising was so creative, it was so category busting, so different from what everyone else was used to seeing as advertising, that it would perform very badly in development research. And therefore CDP said, we don't want to do it. Despite them saying that, they had to do development research more often than you might imagine. That's why the story about Heineken pre-testing groups is so often told, because they were forced to do the groups and the ads didn't research very well. The story goes that they showed this ad of policemen taking their shoes and socks off and rolling backwards and forwards on their feet. And in the focus groups, people said, why would anyone drink a beer based on policemen's smelly feet? So, ergo, research groups are no good and no one pays any attention to them. Well, that's the line that CDP took. And Tony Brignall's famous comment, he was one of the copywriters at CDP, he said, we don't test our advertising on animals. In other words, we'd rather that we don't show our advertising to people, because they don't know enough to tell us anything useful about whether the advertising is any good or not. Our job is to establish whether the advertising is faithful to the generic benefits. Now, largely on the strength of this, I thought that CDP might be considered to be a lost planning school. It's certainly a very different kind of planning thinking from either focusing on long-term brand benefits, which is what J. Walter Thompson was doing, or on creative development and creating advertising which people liked and connected with and could themselves make a connection through to product benefits, which is the Boaz Massimi Pollitt way of doing things. Tracy was quite categorical that this was not a third planning school, and this is her reasoning. The use of the planning department, once it had been set up, was to create these strategies and to help to sell the work in following the research which the planning department had set up with the products, but not in terms of development research. However, if it turned out that the work, the idea that which the creative department had come up with, didn't quite fit the product strategy, the planners would be told to rewrite the strategy to post-rationalise the idea that in the end that advertising was so brilliant, so creative, it would create the kinds of conditions that would make that product successful no matter what, whatever people might have thought of it in research, but in particular that it would carry all before it because the advertising would be so famous, it would define what the brand was about, it would be a success. And this is why we don't want CDP to be seen as a third planning school, because that is a form of planning which is basically planning a salesmanship, a way of post-rationalizing creative ideas and persuading clients to buy them, even if the evidence isn't actually there. Now, I don't deny that planning has a role in terms of pitches and presentations, but if all its role is to simply sell, when you have an account handling department which is perfectly capable of doing that itself, then arguably it undermines the role that planners should play in terms of representing the consumer point of view, in terms of establishing objectivity, and working to do the best advertising, not just to do something in the agency's short-term interest. I don't want to overlook, though, the importance of CDP as an agency and some of the great advertising and planning that it did produce. Possibly the most famous thing that it ever did was that when Jay Chiat came over to the UK, attracted by the creative work of CDP, it was actually less the creative work that convinced him, but David Clifford, that what really made the difference was planning's ability to take creative ideas and to make it possible for clients to buy them and to provide the backing for that. So armed with that, he went back to the States. He did try and hire some planners. I think one of them might even have gone from CDP, but the person he eventually found who was close to hand was Jay Newman, who was the first planner working for Chiat Day in New York, and from there the whole account planning movement spread across the United States. So CDP does certainly play a significant role in that via David Clifford, planning a first move to the United States, and we shouldn't forget that. So that's just our way of dealing with the pretenders in terms of first claimants to have started up account planning. Next week I'll go on to talk a bit more about Stanley Pollett and Stephen King and why they are considered to be the fathers of account planning. Again, hopefully not so much about history, but a way for you to understand why planning is important and what the dynamics of that are as we roll into Christmas. And not to forget, of course, that 2018 is the anniversary year in which account planning was started at Bowes Massimi Pollett and Joe Walsh Thompson. So as I get you ready for the anniversary year, you need to know a bit more about the two guys that put it together. But I think we've dealt with the pretenders this week. Thanks for listening.